This is Phil Farron. And I am driving around. I thought I was going to be driving home this week because we had PI planning, project planning, which is where we kind of scope out the next quarter and we figure out what we're doing. It's all part of the sprint methodology stuff. And it was supposed to last 3 days, but we got through all our stuff. And so then I was working from home today. But I have to go pick up Asher. And then I have to pick up my grandson as well today because apparently my granddaughter hurt her knee and there's a doctor's appointment. So I'm going to pick up both of them, but I'm going a little early. And so we'll drive around a little bit and we'll go ahead and get this done. So anyway, it's been a good week. Oh, we are facing it this weekend. I don't know how much of the rest of the country is going through what we're going through because of some polar vortex thing. I don't know. But yeah, it's very unusual for us to get down in the single digits. Even more unusual for us to go negative. But we are supposed to be in the single digits for the lows on Saturday and Sunday. And then on Monday, we're actually supposed to be in the negatives. But it's only for one day, and then we start warming up. So I feel bad for Dustin, because on Monday, he has to work, and it's going to start out the day at like -6 or -7. It's like, oh. And we are getting a storm front in with that. And so they're projecting anywhere between 6 and 10 inches by the time it's all said and done. But then we're even going to start, the snow will start melting a little bit on Tuesday. And so, yeah, it's winter. But we'll make it through. We'll make it through step at a time. I am so glad that this weekend is Manuary. We're celebrating Manuary this weekend. And so that's my lumberjack costume. I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. So for those of you who know the Monty Python skit. So that's not only do I put on my bodysuit that I usually wear for Labor Day, which is the muscly suit that we made several years ago. But then, of course, I've got my flannel shirt. I've got my heavy pants. Something I heard last year while I was doing it, what had I done? Oh, gloves. I had bought some work gloves that shed, and they were like orange. And so I had like this, you know, stuff all over my pants from that orange thing. And one of the guys says, yeah, that just looks like sawdust. We call that man glitter. So yeah, it was funny. So I learned a new term that weekend, man glitter. So anyways, but this is Lumberjack Day weekend. The cold temperatures aren't going to be here tomorrow yet, but tomorrow is just supposed to fall. I mean, right now, it's like in the 40s. It's glorious. But not tomorrow. We'll get through it. So costumes are fine. I'm still working on I'm working on Mario, although I did have another idea for Halloween this year. Maybe I got time. So we had a motorized wheelchair that I had bought as part of our April Fool's thing in 2023. That's a long story, but kind of one of those miraculous Jesus Whisper stories, because this image popped into my head of my wife as a little old man motoring around on an electric wheelchair in Walmart, and I being the tired executive assistant, you know, trudging about behind her as part of April Fool's, because we wanted to see if anybody would recognize us. So that was fun. But those wheelchairs are like $1,800, $2,500, something like that. And I didn't know that at the time. And I was like, okay, you know, I don't want to spend that much money. And then my mother-in-law had said, hey, you should call Maranatha because they have a thrift store over there where people donate items. And so I called over there and the guy said, yeah, we got one. He said, but the batteries, we think its batteries are bad and, you know, it's not working and we could put batteries in it and stuff, but I'm not sure we want to go to all that trouble because they're all just volunteers in there. And so if you want it, we'd sell it to you for $35. I was like, sure. And so I did pay them $50 after it was all said and done, just as a way kind of contribute to Maranatha Village, which is where my parents were until they died. And then I replaced the batteries. We were still having trouble. I cleaned the contacts. I did a few other little things. I probably was changed the seats out. I don't know. I was in it $200-$300, but I got a working motorized wheelchair, and my wife puttered around in Walmart in it. So I had that downstairs, and I was thinking about Halloween, because Halloween is on Saturday, and one of the really fun things about this last year was that Halloween was on a Friday, and so I was in costume as a Halloween costume, but so were a non-trivial number of other Walmart workers, and we took pictures together, and it was fun. So I thought, oh, I got to kind of up my game a little bit here. I got to do something different. Because I have a Puss in Boots costume, but it's not, because Puss in Boots doesn't wear any clothes and I can't go into Walmart like that. So it's more like a Puss in Boots with the leggings and, what is it, with the leggings and the long sleeve shirt. That's right, because I have this big ruffle long sleeve shirt. And I have a jabot, and it's a gorgeous jabot. I mean, it's just, so it's, I am Puss in Boots with the leggings and the long sleeve shirt and the fabulous yabo. So it's very cute. So that was fine. I did that one first time in 2024 because I think it was the 20th anniversary of Puss in Boots. Puss in Boots. 20th anniversary of Puss in Boots in being in Shrek 2. And so that was appropriate for there. Well, I wore it again for 2025, and it was okay. But I knew I needed to up my game. So for 2026, it's going to be on Saturday, which means the Walmart workers will still be dressed up when I will be in there. But I wanted something different. So I got to thinking about that wheelchair. And I got to thinking about the fact that apparently Bridgerton and whatever other period, 18th century, 19th century period television is influencing culture at this point. AliExpress actually is carrying a lot of those very ornate costumes for men and women. And I started looking at the ones for men because I've always wanted to do a Venice Carnival costume, and there's plenty of those that could pass for that in there. Well, in the process of me looking at that, then of course the recommendations start coming in for the female dresses as well, because they match a lot of names, numbers, and blah, 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 blah. So I was out for a run on Sunday, and I got this idea, you know, for Halloween, you could get one of those 18th century Rococo gowns that they have the cheap on AliExpress. I mean, they're like $150. Okay, $150 is a lot of money, but I'm quasi-retired now. I have a costume budget. One of those with the huge, big, poofy skirts. And I thought, I bet I could put the wheelchair underneath that thing, build a railing around it to hold the skirt out, and then cut a hole for my head to go about waist level, because that's where the hands are, and then I could stick my hands through other holes, at least one hand, and make it look like the hands were holding the head down at the waist, and then I could just have a little torso top with no head on it above me, and I could be Marie Antoinette. So, and I thought, well, this would be fun, and I thought, well, I got to clear it with my wife. So, but I told my wife what I wanted to do, and she just laughed. She thought it was funny, so I think we're okay. So I did go ahead and start ordering some stuff for that. I pulled the wheelchair out. The wheelchair won't run. And I think it's because something I didn't know, the batteries on those wheelchairs are what are called SLA, I think. And they only are good for like 2 to 3 years. Well, the last time we used this wheelchair was 2023. And it's like, oh, yeah, okay, gonna have to replace the batteries. So then I thought, well, okay. But then I remembered that Nana had a very small wheelchair. It was just kind of small and tiny. And I thought, well, shoot, I don't necessarily need a motorized wheelchair. I can just paddle along with my feet. And that will actually work better because I don't have to heft around this wheelchair, which it is really heavy. And so that's probably what I'm going to do now, is I'm just going to use the little manually powered wheelchair. And, you know, just go from there and put... So I've ordered the dress from AliExpress because, you know, things take a while. And I wanted to make sure I was going to get it in time. So I went ahead and ordered the dress. I had some extra points on my card and, you know, used stuff for that and ordered some other stuff. And, you know, ta-da-da-da. So there's that. I'm also going to throw in a quick costume for my dentist. Somehow I ended up with a dentist appointment on a Tuesday, which I don't usually do that because that's a work day. I'm not sure how that happened, but then I usually wear a costume down to see my dentist, and I could have done manuary, but it's just okay. You know, it's not really flashy. And so I was looking for a new holiday, and apparently the 28th, which is the day after this Wednesday coming up, the 28th is the Gift of the Ladybug Day, which... You will never have heard of the holiday Gift of the Ladybug Day because National Day Calendar, the website, is happy to proclaim anything you want as a national calendar day if you give them $1,500. So apparently, there was the author of this book, The Gift of the Ladybug. She's a mom. Her son was diagnosed with, I believe, terminal cancer. And of course, that's very tragic. And while she was in the process of going through and, you know, being with her son as he went through this process, she had an image popped into her head. We call this a whisper. She had an image pop into her head of a family of horses that had a child, but instead of having a horse, they had a ladybug, and everybody was crying because, you know, the ladybug didn't live nearly as long as the horses, and then the ladybug was telling them, look, I'm still your child, and I'm a ladybug. That's just what's going to happen. And so out of that, she wrote this book, The Gift of the Ladybug, and it's apparently a very sweet story about how to deal with tragedy and loss and unexpectedly short lifespans. And so that's a nice holiday. It's nice. And she sells a plush toy that the proceeds from the book, a portion of the proceeds from the book and from the plush toy, go to a foundation that she has started for parents of terminally ill children. And so, you know, it's a good cause. So I ordered myself a ladybug costume. Apparently there's a superhero, the Marvelous Ladybug. I don't know. And so there's really cute ladybug costumes. And so I ordered a ladybug costume, and I'm just going to wear it this Tuesday down to the dentist. And, you know, that'll be that. So that's fun. So that's costumes. The book writing is still going well. I'm on chapter 24 of the 24th book, which is the last book, and it all seems to be developing well. I think I'm right on pace for where I'm supposed to be as far as the arc of the book, and ending it around 30 chapters or so seems to be okay. Everything is lined out well so far. You know, I've had some hero moments in it, which is what we want, and getting a lot of side issues wrapped up, and so that all seems to be going fine. So... that's good, that's good, that's good. So all is well there. And that's it. I obviously have been working for 12 years. on this series. And I had a friend ask me this week, as I have had friends ask me for a while, so what's it going to feel like? Because you've been working on this for 12 years. And I said, yeah, I have. And I'm ready to be done. I mean, it was a marvelous, marvelous experience. But I have been working on this for 12 years. And I'm more than ready to just wrap it up and say, you know, that was fun. On to other things. And not necessarily to have that kind of crush of needing, you know, to just all the time be working on a book and knowing I have this many words that I have to get done and this many words that I have to get done and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And so it's, I'm looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to moving on to other projects. So, you know, I think that's going to be good. And as far as I know now, we are on track. And I have approximately 8 more chapters to go. I think this one's going to have 2 epilogues in it. And so probably go to somewhere around chapter 30, get everything wrapped up, and then have 2 epilogues. So, and I'm on chapter 24 now, so 6, 7, 8 chapters to go. But I've got another week in January and 4 weeks in February, so I've got 5 weeks to go, and I'm already up to 113,000 words, and so I'm well within the target. Anyways, this week, I know I've been doing a lot of Brent Weinstein stuff, but he has had a lot of really fascinating guests on. And I love the fact that he does a subset of his podcast that he calls The Third Rail. And so what he has is there is the live podcast that he does with his wife, and they discuss issues. And then beyond that, he does other podcasts called The Third Rail, and it's where he just takes on stuff that's controversial, because his philosophy is correct that we should be able, excuse me while I blow my nose, we should be able to talk about these things. And so because of that, he does take on things that other people seem to shy away from, and I really respect that. Let me just make sure this is still going. It should still be going. Yes, it's still going. Okay, good. Anyways, so he did a podcast with Michael Shermer, who is the president, I think, of the Skeptics Society. Michael Shermer had just written a new book on truth, which is pretty interesting. But the discussion was fascinating because both of these men will eschew the direct claim that there is a God. Michael Shermer is famously an atheist. I think Brent Weinstein would probably lean closer to calling himself an agnostic now, because there are things that it's just impossible to know. But he is certainly anchored in the material world and anchored in the processes of the material world, because he's an evolutionary biologist who believes that Darwin's theory is basically correct. He understands that there are some gaps and some holes, and, you know, we'll talk about that in just a minute, because he actually brings it up. And he validates that the people who are poking the most holes in Darwin's theory at this point and saying, wait, you don't make sense here, are in fact not other evolutionary biologists, but are in fact the intelligent design people who are saying, wait, you've got a problem. And he finds their input valuable. So, you know, it's an interesting mix to have being discussing the idea of truth. And what's fascinating to me is they are both dealing and wrestling with the idea of how do we know what is true? And both agree on a foundational premise that human knowledge is fallible and no one is omniscient, and that an honest system of truth-seeking must always begin with the assumption, I could be wrong. Well, that's refreshing, you know, because sometimes the atheist and those who are beating the drum that there is no God, I mean, they just will not hear anything else or any other explanation. No. They always usually refer to Occam's razor because, you know, so, and with Occam's razor, as I've said before, basically what you have is a premise who prioritizes naturalism and materialism. And then when you bring up anything else, they point to the premise as if it's true, when in fact the premise has a fallacy on it to begin with, that it prioritizes materialism. A priori, it prioritizes materialism. It just says, nope, this seems better because the people who made it up were materialists. So, you know, it's like, I think you're in a bit of circular reasoning there. So anyways, Shermer, outlined his core beliefs and saying all beliefs should be held probabilistically, never with absolute certainty. We cannot personally verify most claims. We must rely on authority in order to function. If authority degrades, rational trust becomes dangerous. So this is where it gets really interesting between Brent Weinstein and Michael Shermer, because Michael Shermer agrees. Well, Michael Shermer wants to take the experts and the system of experts and put his trust in them. But Brent Weinstein believes that the experts are not doing their jobs. And he argues that we no longer live in a high trust epistemic era. According to him, expertise is compromised by ideology, politics, and incentives. Pseudoscience increasingly masquerades as consensus science. Institutional failure leaves the public unable to distinguish truth from fraud. And Shermer pushes back and he says, well, but the science is still our best self-correcting system. You know, and the problem is Eric Weinstein just said, well, it's maybe not, because he gave example after example after example of stuff falling down. And then, of course, they brought up the famous quote that science proceeds by one funeral at a time, that you end up with these guys who amass enough power to themselves that they start influencing where the monies go. And so if you want to do research, what you end up doing is kowtowing to certain structures of explanations, whether you believe them or not, because if you don't, you can't get grant money. And finally, what has to happen is whoever the pinnacles of that school of thought is, they have to die off, and their influence has to wane until other people start putting up their hands and saying, wait a minute, what about this? What about this? What about that? And they did get into a discussion about creationism and intelligent design. And the problem with Shermer says the problem with intelligent design is it collapses it into God. God did it. And you can't, it violates methodological naturalism. And it fails to test, to generate testable mechanisms. Well, yeah. And part of the problem there is that these systems that God created and designed are so complex, we do not have a fundamental base of knowledge to understand them yet. And so you have people who are legitimately trying to figure out how these things work and coming up with really interesting results, like people like Michael Levin, who take a bunch of cells that have been stripped of all their electrical networks and just sticks them in a petri dish and they start self-organizing. We have no idea how that happens. And so Michael Levin is demonstrating that there is this incredible functionality that is all the way down at the base of the cell that we had no idea was down there. And all we're doing is just dancing up at the top and saying, oh, these systems are so amazing. We can explain everything that's going on, but we really can't. So at some point it gets so complex that you have to, and so finely balanced that you have to acknowledge, okay, there's some kind of a designer here. Somehow all this order came out of chaos. And how did that happen without a designer? So that's interesting. On the other hand, when it comes to intelligent design, you know, Weinstein counters with the observation that some intelligent design researchers do better at identifying genuine gaps in evolutionary theory, and that sometimes mainstream scientists oversell their explanation completeness, and that the fear of religious misuse can blind science to unresolved problems. I mean, they both agreed that that Darwin was fundamentally right, but they disagree about how honest modern Darwinism acknowledges its open questions. And as I've said before, there is no functional difference for me whether you say, oh, all those changes came about because of evolution or because this was designed for adaptation. And I think what we'll find as we move forward that we are going to discover more and more and more that evolution is not a random process. And we have discovered this somewhat. In fact, there are sections of the DNA code that are almost immune to modification. You just don't find that much change in those sections. They're like the big body plan stuff. What's front, what's back, what's top, what's down. And it's only within these other sections that when you change those sections, you're not going to get these big changes that are just going to blow the whole thing up. Now, you could say, well, that's because there were a bunch of big changes and they blew the whole thing off and those creatures died off and all that remained were the ones that had already settled on different body plan types. You know, there's always a way to describe both sides of this coin and to say, well, it's just random or there's actually a designer involved. But it's really interesting. And then, of course, they got into the deeper crisis, and that is the systemic corruption in academia. You know, and Weinstein was just hitting Shermer with all kinds of problems that there is in the peer review system, and this, that, and this other, and whether or not things could be reformed, or do you just need to replace the whole thing, and is it even possible to replace the whole thing? And, you know, they talked about the mechanisms back and forth, or is it really the best way to deal in this new system is to have people going on podcasts as opposed to publishing in peer-reviewed journals? And Weinstein was saying, well, but the peer-reviewed journals are all corrupt and you can't get stuff published in there. It was really interesting. It was really, really interesting. Where I got tickled is they got back on this idea of there is some benefit to religious thought for the people who actually believe it. Because Weinstein was saying, yeah, you know, when you have someone who actually believes there is a God, there is an afterlife, there is purpose, there is meaning, their lives are profoundly affected by that, and their lives are better. They have a better tool set to deal with disappointments and to rejoice in victories and to keep themselves steady. And, you know, it's all these things. I mean, they did keep coming back to the fact that, like, religion is antiquated and, you know, some things don't translate. And one of the examples that Weinstein brought up was kosher foods. You know, well, that came about at a time when, you know, you needed these regulations to keep people healthy and yada, yada, yada. And I'm talking to the radio and I'm going, wait, but hold it. Just take the sayings of Jesus. You're not going to find anything in there that doesn't translate and doesn't work today. That's the amazing thing. What Jesus says works today just as well as it worked then. And what Jesus is saying is completely compatible with scientific investigation. There is nothing that Jesus said that's going to hinder scientific investigation. And even if you are trying to say, well, that was just written by somebody else and Jesus didn't say it, you have to explain how the people 2,000 years ago had such sensibility and such wisdom that they could put down a series of sayings that has such cultural reach that it can move across all cultures in all times and provide a roadmap for how to live a successful life. That's what's amazing. And I can give you just a dumb example, simple dumb example. You look at how Jesus treated women and think about what the prevailing thought was thousands of years ago between men and women. And what you find in Jesus is behavior that we would look at in our contemporary times as perfectly acceptable. The woman at the well. He says to her, give me something to drink. Now we'd say, well, that's kind of, you know, but she was there to draw water and he was opening a conversation. And of course she responds with, how is it that you, a Jew, are talking to me, a Samaritan woman? And then he starts having this deep spiritual conversation with her. He's not degrading her. He's not denigrating her. He's not just treating her as an object of desire. He's having a deep spiritual conversation. 2,000 years ago, a man talking to a female stranger is having a deep spiritual conversation with her. Yeah, that just didn't happen. Just didn't happen. And yet we have it recorded. And Jesus, instead of telling women, oh, you need to dress modestly and you need to do this and you need to do that, tells men, don't lust. Don't stare and lust at women. He goes right back to the source of the problem. He doesn't fall into this trap that so many religions fall into of putting all the blame on the women and telling them they have to cover up. So it's really, really interesting because Brent Weinstein was really going after Shermer for believing still in the supremacy of science, that science could get it all figured out because it was designed to do that. But there is, the problem is that there is assumptions when we say that science is going to do this because people are going to investigate. What you're assuming is that people are going to investigate honestly, that people are going to investigate humbly, that people are going to accept criticisms from others. All of those types of characteristics, that people are going to be honest in their assessments of others' work, that people are not going to be greedy, you know, and filled with desire for riches and envious. All of those things are moral qualities. And science provides us no mechanism for generating those moral qualities within us. You have to inherently have those qualities before you become a scientist in order for science to work. In other words, the foundation, all the early scientists were either deist or theist in Western culture. The very foundation of Western culture and the move into the Renaissance and into science is predicated on the fact that you had a population set that had a pre-ingrained notion of what was true and honest, what true behavior looked like and honest behavior looked like. And it was out of that that people could then make observations, listen to others' observations, not compete with them, not steal their ideas, be honest, reflect well, receive criticism, all those things that are absolutely essential for science to function. All of those things are defined back into the Christian belief system. And honestly, they're simply defined by what Jesus said, love God, love your neighbor. And they're simply defined by what Paul said. The fruit of the Spirit are love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. If you have a scientist that has those qualities, you're going to do real science. If you have a scientist who doesn't have those qualities, you may get some discoveries made, but when the wrong conclusions are reached and there's no self-control, you know, then you end up building battlements and denying people money and tyranny and all those things that science can become. So it was a very, very interesting discussion, and it was interesting to hear Weinstein kind of battling Michael Shermer down over the fact that everything is broken in science. And of course, Michael Shermer eventually responded, well, what are we supposed to do then? Well, that is the question. And while it would be great to pay lip service to some kind of a we need a moral foundation, et cetera, but where are we going to get it? And we need to reform these religious organizations, you know, religious schools of thought and modernizing them. No, we don't need to modernize them. We just need to take what Jesus said. Because it will work just fine. This is Phil Ferrand, and I am ready to go get Aiden. Have a great day, everyone. And have a great weekend. And for those of you who are in Springfield, batten down the hatches because the cold is coming.